Thursday, August 25th, was one of those days of indecision, no achievement, plain stalemate that leaves me indignant with myself.
Not
worth living, not worth remembering, certainly, except for one moment at the end of the day. It began early with breakfast with Lyndon about 7:30, and then I caught an early shuttle with Bess to New York, and with the Carlisle as a base, looked at clothes with Miss Trez and Adele Simpson and her daughter Mrs. Raines for nearly 3 hours. Nothing allured me. Nothing did I yearn for. Nothing did I buy. There was only one oasis of vivid interest.
Bob
Dowling came up to see me, and for about 30 minutes he talked about the problems of cities. Specifically, he wanted me to come to see Sterling Gardens
on
October 2nd when Lyndon may make a visit to Congressman Dow's district, quite close by. He's a marvelous talker. He told me about the big rebuilding project
of
Pittsburgh, the one that's in Chrysalis in Philadelphia, right opposite the museum, of Louisville, and of Sterling Gardens itself, which sounds like a sylvan paradise where research laboratories and the University of New York furnish the jobs for people, and some 500 or so families live, and as many as 400,000 people come to visit their wonderful gardens. He said when you're trying to sell a project, the city fathers always go with big pictures, something that folds up and maybe fills the side of the wall. His vision, the amounts of money he talked in, were terrifically exciting. I gathered, unhappily, that he took a rather dim view of the conference in Washington on urban problems in early September. A view of the pro was watching the professors have a try at something that they have never themselves built but only written about. This time with him made me wish that I had the brains and the energy to comprehend the problems that face cities and the mortgage on the years of the future that would enable me to see what we do about them, we Americans, in the decade in front of us. Linda Bird was at the Carlton, too, or rather her suitcase was. She was at the Harper's Bazaar being interviewed for a possible job. I caught an early shuttle before she returned. Was back at the White House by 5. At loose ends and bored with my own lack of achievement in the day, I took some exercises as part of my resolution, this is January the 1st, let's begin again attitude. And then I went down to the theater and curled up to watch an amusing movie, The Russians Are Coming. I'd seen bits and pieces of it, and this time I got to see almost the whole thing until the last 5 minutes, when a call from Lyndon about 9:30 said, I'm over for dinner, come join me. I went up. He was deeply immersed in some papers. There was a pretty little package on the table in front of him. A small, valuable-looking package. He said, there's something you'll want to open, quite casual-like. I assumed it was a birthday present to him. Day after tomorrow is his birthday. I opened it, and there was the diamond ring. Beautiful, round, about 4 carats, a dream of a diamond. The one I'd picked out is the one I'd like to have, if I could ever have one. I practically dissolved in laughter and tears. I really didn't think, with the wedding and all the expense, I'd have it before we got out of the White House, if ever. It was a beauty. I loved it. And his very underplayed way of presenting it. Linda Bird came in. We both tried it on. She talked to her daddy about her job prospects. We went to bed by 11:30. A nothing of a day, except one wonderful event. I remember all the years I've taken a rather condescending view of women who wanted or needed diamonds, saying something like this. A diamond is just a shiny rock that advertises that some successful man cherishes you. And I already know that, so I don't need it. Now I find myself at 53, very proud to have the shiny rock, delighted with being told I'm cherished, and not sure wherein the nugget of truth lies.